since the guys spoke High German from the start, even among themselves. I asked them, suspecting a special branch of the Bundys, what kind of bunch they were. I had never seen or even heard their tactical symbol. Then one of the men, who looked absolutely like normal Germans, they were of normal human size, no greys, but one or two women in suits, told me that they belonged neither to my military organization nor to the enemy, but came from another distant planet, completely independent in every respect. They smiled as they said it, as if they knew full well that I, the naive earthling, could never and would never believe such a thing. They said the name of the planet, but I can't remember it. At some point I was lying on the table in the middle of the command center. There was laughter. I can say one. He, I was meant, is okay, the guy. Someone was fiddling with the fly of my uniform. An electrical device with a noticeable operating noise was attached to my penis, which caused a peripheral rather than central nervous excitation, followed by ejaculation. I was told that I would have great difficulties in my future life because I was completely different from the majority of my fellow human beings. I was warned urgently. I then left the crew in the greatest of friendship and was escorted back to my assigned post by a few men. The vehicle took off and disappeared like a ghost, without gradual acceleration, quickly, several dimensions faster than the fastest jet fighters. In addition to the images published in this book, there is also other excellent film and photo material about the flying objects just mentioned, for example the 60-minute documentary UFO Secrets of the Second Reich, available from Aldebar and Verse and, see advertising page in the appendix. The same applies to the material from the American Vladimir Terzisky, who gave a 3-hour slide presentation with photos of German sources, construction plans and underground German bases at the UFO conference in September 1991 in Phoenix, Arizona. Also interesting is the material that the Italian Air Force commander Renato Vesco has compiled in his book, Man-Made UFOs 1944-1994. Renato Vesco and David Hatcher Childress, Adventures Unlimited Press, Stell, Illinois 60919, USA. Picture. Design of the planned large spaceship Hornbu 4, with a diameter of 120 meters. Chapter 12, The Journey to Mr. X. By Rainer. In order to get a little closer to all the so-called coincidences, visions and dreams, we finally made contact with Mr. X, and visited him together with our friends. We were very excited on the way to him and curious to see if we would find another piece of the puzzle that would finally shed more light on the mystery of the great beings. At least a little bit. It would help us personally a lot. Above all because, despite our numerous experiences, we still had certain doubts. After an 8-hour drive with a few traffic jams, we reached the 30 capital, quite tired and exhausted, and were greeted very warmly by Mr. X and his family. They radiated a lot of calm and warmth and took away our embarrassment right from the start. After a short break to recover from the long drive, we had a tentative conversation, which gradually became more relaxed until he finally revealed a small part of his great knowledge to us. During this conversation it also emerged that Mr. X and Jan Van Helsing, whom we did not know at the time, were also friends and had already exchanged some material with each other. This knowledge is very old and we would like to emphasize that we are only interested in the information from the extraterrestrials and everything that is connected with it. Other events that happened back then and that still trigger a lot of emotions in some people today are of no interest to us. We are personally only interested in the truth about these entities that we saw during our hypnotic regressions and the two physical contacts, the morning when I fell into bed and the woman at the garden fence, and that matched Mr. X's descriptions exactly. His sources of information go back to the beginning of the 20th century and he still receives information today about transmedia contacts with these extraterrestrials. There are far more data, facts, photos and images about the German flying discs, with which Mr. X's information is also connected, than have been published by Jan so far. Strangely enough, In today's UFO scene, all images and documents are meticulously examined for their authenticity. But all facts, data and photos from that time are not taken into account. Why? We don't even want to touch on this topic, although we have since been able to see documents that have convinced us that there were actually UFOs built and flown at that time. But this is not so important for us. We are very interested in the statements of the transcendental mediums of that time in order to compare them with our experiences and find parallels. With the consent of Mr. X, we now want to pass on some of his information to you and integrate it into our experiences in order to enable us to gain a better understanding of him, of ourselves and of the extraterrestrials. Chapter 13, The Magical Power of Women by Mr. X. The spiritual mediums of the Vril Society at that time were all women and young girls. This was based on the underlying magical concept. This magic had predominantly ancient Oriental foundations, and it mainly came from the Black Order Book of the IAIs. Not much has ever been known about these mediumistic women, although some of them are certainly still knowledgeable. This is probably not just for reasons of secrecy. Rather, most of the leading figures of the time very quickly and rather abruptly distanced themselves from the occultists, to whom they owed a great deal. After the so-called Rumputsch in 1934, at the latest, people apparently no longer wanted to know anything about the spiritual forerunners. It was not long before occult associations were even banned, even though some leading figures still felt connected to them. The occultists could only continue to work in secret, at best with silent tolerance. It was only the increasingly disastrous war situation that led to the technical department of the Vril Society finding support again. The magical component remained hidden or was kept there. The long magical antennas, as the hair of the mediums was called, probably played an important role in transmedia communication. They form a common characteristic of the most important transmedia about which information is available. These IAIs mediums, as they were also called, were supposed to have been artificial mediums that could only work for a short time. Due to the fact that a mediumistic disposition is a rare talent that cannot be learned, the IAIs principle was used. It is a magical procedure, and this principle goes back to the IAIs cult, whose aim was, among other things, to call the goddess IAIs into the medium for a while, so to speak, in order to be able to speak to her. The IAIs cult believes that through willpower and according to certain laws of the affinity of vibrations, they can attract these into women's hair and fix them there. Women's hair charged in this way is then considered to be a multifunctioning energy store in which the general vibration of the presumed superspace, space, beyond can also be manifested. According to the IAIs cult, these vibrations can then be held in place by special magical rituals so that they do not escape for a long time, even if they are cut off. And it is said to be possible to create vibrational storage devices with great effectiveness. It is believed that such vibrational storage devices can create a constant flow of power from the goddess IAIs to her followers. The goddess IAIs became known in Europe in the Middle Ages, particularly through her alleged personal appearance on the Untersberg near Salzburg in the 13th century, where she is said to have given a band of knights a magical black violet stone and the IAIs revelation, available from Aldebar and Verzend, see appendix. Characteristic of the IAIs is her boyish costume, in which she leads the fight against the Prince of Hell, Shadane. The IAIs probably goes back to the Near East, where she was seen as a cat or panther goddess, as in Assyria. She is also probably identical with the Egyptian Sechmet. Through Gnosis, the IAIs entered the Greek cultural sphere. Later, in the Middle Ages, pagan IAIs myths migrated from southern Germany to the British Isles and Scandinavia, but without gaining a foothold. All of this is worth mentioning here because the IAI's symbol also became the symbol of the Vril Society and its transmedia in turn claimed that it was also the emblem of the Aldebaran Empire. This cannot unfortunately be published here, as it could be interpreted as the use of symbols of unconstitutional organizations. It is a silver lightning-like symbol on a black, violet divided background. If these signs were really identical, one could almost assume that the goddess Iais was perhaps an Aldebaran herself. The following is known all about two of the mediums of this time. The girl Maria, Maria Orsic, Nord.link on she, and here Mirror of same, was Croatian, probably from Zagreb. In any case, at the end of 1916 she met Rudolf von Sebottendorf, the later founder of the Thule Society, who, among other things, conducted some studies on the Germanic origins of the Croats, Herweren. The two became friends. Between 1917 and 1945, Maria was the most important medium of the Vril Circle. She can also be seen as the founder of the spiritual medium work there. Almost all of the transmediums of the Vril Society went through Maria's school in a way. Maria Orsic, like all of the spiritual mediums of the circle, always stayed in the background and therefore sometimes appeared under other names. Until the end, Maria Orsic remained one of the key figures in the Vril Circle and is to be regarded as the driving force of the transmedia work. She is certainly one of the most mysterious personalities of this time. Maria always knew how to remain elusive. Her work was all the more significant for that. As far as is known, Maria is married in Vinland and lives unrecognized in good health. The Vril medium Sigrun. Sigrun was still very young, probably only 17, when she joined the Vril Circle. She was discovered by Maria Orsic, who recognized Sigrun's extraordinary spiritual medium abilities and trained her. Sigrun comes from the East German landed gentry. She grew up in Manchuria and came to Berlin at the age of 14 and then to Magdeburg. Through a brother, Sigrun came into close contact with technology and aviation at an early age, which had a significant influence on her interests. Since the Vril Society was particularly interested in magical means and Sigrun had the best aptitude for them, she was passed on to the Vril overall circle. She is therefore to be counted as part of the Vril Circle, although she came from the Thule Circle and still belongs to it. Sigrun later became, after Maria, the most important medium in all transmedia activities due to her extremely strong mediumship. There are various versions about her whereabouts. One of them says that she took her own life in 1945. But there is no evidence for this. Another, more likely, says that Sigrun stayed in Germany until 1949 and married in Norway or Sweden. In addition to Maria and Sigrun, there are said to have been other women who acted as mediums for the Vril Society, drawing, not shown, of Iais as it is said to have appeared to the young knights in the 13th century Untersberg. Source, STM Archive, about whom, however, nothing significant is known. In addition, we learn the following about the Vril Society from a member of the Martianite Order. At that time, the Thule Society was founded as an umbrella organization for various groups, but its orientation became increasingly political and patriarchal. The Vril Society was a sub-member of the Thule Society for a time. With the emergence of the National Socialist component in the Thule Circle, the Vril Society's connection to it was dissolved. This was a gradual process that was finally ended by the Thule leadership through a polite de facto exclusion. In 1933, after the National Socialists came to power, the Vril Society officially dissolved and existed under the association continued under the name Iais Bund, which was finally banned in 1941. It is uncertain to what extent the UFO Vril Society was identical with the Iais Bund. The probability suggests that a division took place in 1933. The more or less worldly but also technically oriented members seem to have entered have formed a community that continued to stay together under the loose name Vril. This group probably had little to do with Iais. Watercolor by Maria Orsic. Source, Smarchive. 164, The Medium Sigrun. Source, Smarchive. You can find pictures in the PDF book in German. Chapter 14, What evidence is there of the Vril Odin flight? It should be mentioned again briefly here that an important meeting of the Vril Society took place in the North Sea resort of Kolberg around Christmas 1943. It was about the Aldebaran Company. The mediums Maria and Sigrun had received precise information about the inhabited planets and the sun of Aldebaran, and they began to plan a trip there. Under the venture, known as the Vril Project, they wanted to use the Vril Odin to penetrate to Aldebaran through a dimensional channel independent of the speed of light. But before that happened, another meeting of the highest Vril people took place, where the German leadership was also informed about it and the seriousness of the undertaking was explained again. We have the following lecture by Professor Dr. Schumann, from the STM archive, which was given at this meeting. Lecture on the secret of starflight. Dear comrades, dear guests, who have gathered here today at the 23rd Wolfsburg meeting, I would also like to thank you in particular, dear A, for coming to us especially for this day, and you, dear friend Dornberger, who have traveled a long way from the northeast of the Reich for these hours to listen to what those have to say about flight to the stars whose devices do not rise into the sky with thunderous fire, but with what many find eerie silence. I have just called the distance from Peenemünter, Wolfsburg here in Carinthia a long way. The proportionality of the concept of distance has already been shown in this. Last year, our guest speaker, Engineer Brutzel, described the edges of our own solar system as the ultimate in human reach in terms of bridging distances. He named the Moon and perhaps Mars as possible destinations in space that could actually be reached within the next 2 decades. These are indeed considerable distances that were being discussed. But we are talking about distances of a completely different magnitude. The distances we are talking about are related to the distance between the Moon and Mars in roughly the same way as the distance between Peenemünde and Wolfsburg is to this one. We are talking about other solar systems, perhaps even other galaxies. Are we still on reasonable ground? Are we more than clairvoyants, as our friend Engels said 4 years ago? Or are we the spearhead of a new world generation, as our friend Stegmaeus said to the WHO? We are, in our own opinion, servants of a divine force, whose gifts it is our mission and task to use. If we look at the achievements of human technology, we see that the divine providence of things has the greatest share in everything. One example should suffice. Could there be a radio broadcast without the divinely provided natural conditions? And we believe we can see it in everything. There is something like divine preparatory work in everything, which makes up around 90%. Only the additional 10% necessary for use is done by humans. Our basis for thinking is therefore to look out for such divine preparatory work in order to make it tangible for humanity. This is how we found and seized the powers of Vril. Such powers have already been reported in the ancient history of Aryan memory. For example, in the Ramayana about the Vimanu airplanes. When working through old Babylonian written documents, Delitzsch came across further traces of such divine knowledge. The wise men of old followed the path that we are trying to follow again, the path of looking for points of contact with divine preparatory work. The quiet, profound wisdom of the ancient Orient took root in Germany in the Middle Ages. This was an event whose significance only a few have fully grasped. In Germany, the pure man of action in Europe, who sees only the superficial, became a knowing wise man, a divine, like the ancients in Babylon, Egypt and India, and probably also our early Germanic forefathers. The transcendental found a new home in German lands. This happened in the first half of the 13th century on the Untersberg with the appearance of Aeis, that strange divine being to whom we owe so much. The top FF carried spirits have understood this, there, is familiar with it. Recognizing it also means paving the way for star flight. This brings us to the focus of this discussion, the secret of star flight. The laws of nature seem to stand in the way of the flight of stars, the true flight that reaches far away. In particular, the limitation of the speed of light also seems to limit the flight of stars. But we say, there is no such limitation. There is no limitation of any kind to the speed of movement. Many things are faster than light. Because there is not only the physical world, but also, and much more importantly, the spiritual world. The solution can already be found in the Vedas of the ancients. The fastest of all that flies is thought. Here we come to a basis of the new, German, a science. We break the boundaries and free the spirit from narrowness. We overcome the shackles of limitation that do not exist in truth. For too long we have allowed ourselves to be chained by the natural laws of limitation. It is due to Thej religion, which knows no afterlife, but is rather entirely focused on this world, that all conclusions are only this worldly physical. The natural laws of this world have been declared to be the only ones. But there is an afterlife. And there are therefore natural laws of the afterlife that are above those of this world. If we understand this view of everything, it must become clear that we are dealing with a large overall structure of this world and the afterlife, in which natural laws of this world and the afterlife come together, nested and interwoven. Only those who recognize the natural laws of the afterlife know the big picture. Our modern rockets can do amazing things. But they are not able to leave the vibration networks of this world. That is why their range is limited. The secret of distant star flight lies in leaving the vibration networks of this world and in the aircraft changing to vibration networks of the afterlife. When we change to the afterlife, our aircraft is no longer subject to the natural laws of this world, but to the natural laws of the afterlife. But there is a different time there. There, the fastest thing that flies is not light, but thought. The spirit. Is this, as some may think, occultism? Not at all. The afterlife exists just as really and truly as the here and now. It is even the larger, stronger plane in which our universe can be seen as a relatively small structure. The flight through the afterlife, the flight through the intercosmos, as Rudolf von Sebottendorf called it, is a technology that is just as strictly scientific as rockets or any other. It follows no less precise laws, only that these laws are of a higher kind because they combine physical and spiritual laws. Everything is based on vibrations. Just like, to use an example already used, radio waves. The variable capacitor determines the wavelength and thus the transmitter. The conversion of one frequency into another causes the change. In higher planes it is not much different, fundamentally speaking. There are vibration networks and vibration planes on this side and on the other side. If it is possible to evoke a certain vibration, the magnetism of the affinity law, law of resonance, ADV, sets in. At the highest level, a complete transformation takes place. Transmutation. And that is the technical background of our vril devices. They rise into the air on this side and leave the immediate area of influence of the Earth. Then the transmutation sets in. The vril aircraft ceases to be a body on this side. It also disappears for the eye looking outside the vril aircraft. The vril aircraft becomes an intercosmic spaceship. It temporarily has nothing more to do with the sphere on this side and rushes through enormous distances in the shortest possible time, only to transmute back into the universe on this side at its destination. In this way, our Vril 7, named Odin, ADV, will reach the solar system of Aldebaran. And I have no doubt that later German space Vril ships will also reach Andromeda and the most remote areas of this world's space. It is clear to us that this technology probably cannot be described as being suitable for weapons immediately. It is a technology for possible battles in space. May there never be such battles. For acute frontline use today, the value of Vril technology is still low. But even there, there may still be some things that have yet to be revealed. What can distant star flights bring us? We do not yet know. The connection and alliance with cultures of other worlds. If the transmedia connections so far are not misleading, there is a related culture in the system of the Sun Aldebaran. Perhaps support will come from there, a balance against the numerical superiority of the enemy on Earth. That sounds like something from a utopian novel, but it has very tangible backgrounds. In the Transilis activity was the beginning of Vril's work and the key to the successes that have taken place so far. The Untersberg revelation texts of the 13th century showed how to proceed. But now is not the time to talk about this in detail. The coming time, even the next few months, should confirm in an impressive way what Vril technology can achieve in its various possibilities. The secret of starflight lies in the recognition of the interweaving of this world and the next, in the understanding of the different, but mutually resonating, laws of God and nature on this and the next. We are on the verge of entering a completely new age in which a new spirit will prevail. According to this lecture, people were therefore fully prepared to carry out this undertaking. Unfortunately, we do not have any precise information about the launch itself. We will list the little that is available about it here. Essentially, this knowledge comes from unverifiable sources. There are some circumstantial witnesses. For example, a former fighter pilot who was stationed with 7 other pilots to protect an unspecified area that could have been the camouflaged launch site of the Vril Odin. The corresponding facility is said to have been identical to that of the Vril 7, the smaller original version, underground and camouflaged by artificial vegetation. There is also the testimony of a truck driver who drove provisions to a mysterious underground facility that points to the same area. From a town near this very site, either Potsdam in the southwestern area of Berlin, the northern branch of the Vril Company, or Traunstein in the eastern Chiemgau in Upper Bavaria, the southern branch of the Vril Company, a woman reports having seen very strange girls. Some were wearing purple evening dresses and long braids, but others were wearing brown tight trousers and short bobbed hair, which were completely unfashionable at the time. These girls were accompanied by SS men and had waited with their cars for several hours. Until suddenly 2 civilians came on foot, as if they had grown out of the ground. They were then greeted by one of the bobbed-haired girls and then got into one of the cars together and drove off, in the direction of the place from which Vril Odin could have taken off. A man from the same place claims to have seen a UFO that day. From that point of view, that means an alien aircraft that made no noise. A former pioneer reported on a secret mission to uncover a large slit in the ground, under which iron appeared. Possibly the place where the camouflaged hangar door opened. 2 days earlier, a woman in the nearby town was surprised to see 2 girls in tight brown theater costumes. Because of the costumes and because one of them had a braid to put on top and the other had very short hair. They looked like circus artists and very strange at the time. All of these statements refer to the place and time of the assumed Odin takeoff. Chapter 15, Transmedia Protocols, by Mr. X. The transmedia protocols of his time are certainly among the most unusual texts ever written down. Transmedially, or hypertelepathically, received messages from a distant world, far beyond our solar system. Aldebaran, according to recent scientific findings, this cannot be completely ruled out. They report in sometimes astonishing detail about the history of this distant world, about its society and religion, and also about small details. Only small fragments of these writings have survived. Unfortunately, because over the decades many passages have become illegible, as the protocols date from the period from 1919 to around 1949. Much from this time was lost or destroyed in the chaos of war. The transmedia announcements are only a few fragments that remain. Now some information about Aldebaran, as it was passed on through transmedia contact. The Sumerian Empire, Aldebaran according to the Earth's star map, has been a theocracy for a long time. The current state is ruled by priestesses, but is not as firmly established as the earthly states. There are semi-free principalities. The period before that, which lasted a very long time, is called the Great King's Period. At that time, emperors ruled who aspired to a kind of universal empire and who probably managed to establish it for a time. This empire was largely abandoned after a very religious Great King handed over power to the priestesses. Before the Great Kings there were various peoples on the Aldebaran main planet Suma, who also waged war among themselves. In the last of these wars, King Durja of Ogatdan defeated all other peoples and had them rigorously relocated to the neighboring planeton. Since then there has only been one unified people on Suma. King Durja became the first great king. Today, around 1943 Earth time, Aldebaran is at war with two other worlds, Nanut, presumably Regulus, and Godanos, presumably Capella. This war has been going on for a very long time, as the priest empresses thought it was enough to keep the enemies at a distance. Only recently has this view changed and the war was fought and ended with full commitment.